Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today as we switch gears and talk with you a bit about food security. You know, over the years, I've had a chance to work on many U.S. Agency for International Development projects and programs. I worked in the Caribbean on the Caribbean Agricultural Extension Project. I've worked in Nicaragua, Pakistan, and a number of places. And one of the things that came up, I think, on almost every, in fact, I think in every case, was the issue of food security as a problem for many folks in those countries. And we're going to talk about what is food security. It's an issue for many people around the world, and we have a couple of guests for you today. Pleased to welcome Rob Bertram, who is the chief scientist for the U.S. Agency for International Development's Bureau for Food Security. Rob, welcome to the program, by the way.
Thank you, Larry. Great to be here.
Thank you so much for being with us as well. And Sundaram Gunasekaran, our guest as well. Guna is a professor in the Department of Biosystems Engineering and Food Science at UW-Madison, directs the CALS Global at the UW, and they're putting on an event later today, and we're going to be talking about that as well. It's the Food Security and Global Development Symposium happening right on the UW-Madison campus. You may have some questions or comments about food security as we move along, maybe some experiences to share of your own. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. or post on our Ideas Network Facebook page. I always felt it was such a privilege to be able to work with AID, as we call Agency for International Development. Rob, and here you are, chief scientist for the U.S. AID Food Security Program. Give us a sense of what that means on a day-to-day basis. Talk about the work that you're doing.
Well, maybe I'll first start, though, by saying it's great to be doing this in Madison. I think our partnerships with U.S. universities are one of the most lasting and durable parts of USAID's legacy historically, but currently as well, in terms of building relationships that far outlast the project per se, and those ties have stayed, and I think you're probably seeing some of those being here in Madison. So my job in the Bureau for Food Security is kind of a neat one. It's really about trying to help us bring in evidence to bear that underpins the kinds of investments we make. We have a strong focus on accountability. When Feed the Future, the U.S. government-wide food security initiative, was set up, I think we tried to learn from, say, PEPFAR, the President's Emergency Program on AIDS Relief, to really have a clear idea of how we were going to affect change and measure it so that America and Congress know what they're getting. And so evidence around our investments, be they around research investments, piloting of programs, looking at surveys of impacts or changes before and after an intervention, all of these things bring to bear on what we generally refer to as, say, best practices in development investments.
Yeah. And Guna, food security, I mean, there are a lot of people in this world who go to bed without a great meal.
That's right, unfortunately.
Yeah. Huh. What are the numbers on that? Do you know offhand?
I don't know. Maybe Rob
probably
knows the number better. Yes.
Well, we still think about 1 billion people in the world are food insecure. And while we're making progress in terms of the overall number, the overall percentage or prevalence of hunger and food insecurity, the numbers aren't going down as fast because populations keep rising. But even though we're making progress, Larry, this is no time for complacency. We still think close to 3 million children a year die due to causes linked to undernutrition, not having adequate food or not being able to make food good use of the food they have for other reasons that affect their nutrition.
And that's basically when you're talking about definition of food security. That's
Well, it's really about four things. It's about availability, So you can think about production and productivity. It's about accessibility, which means things like markets, but also that it's affordable. It's nutrition in terms of the quality of the food. And then the other one is stability. In other words, that you can have food throughout the year. We have many places where we work where there's still a hungry season, where people literally go hungry for months a year with tremendous damages, especially on children and their potential for later growth and contribution economically and otherwise.
I was thinking about some of the farms in the areas where I've worked around the world, and in many cases, the farmers themselves were selling their produce or their food and so forth and going hungry, their own families going hungry.
Yeah, we call that the full belly syndrome, where sometimes people will sell their better quality food just so that they have enough rice or cassava or wheat or whatever their staple is to not feel hungry. So we want to make sure that people are getting enough to eat, but also that they're getting the quality of foods, that they're getting fruits and vegetables, legumes, and animal source foods.
Yeah. Good. Let's talk about what's work being done right here in Wisconsin on these issues. Rob mentioned earlier that we've had some pretty strong partnerships with AID and elsewhere.
Well, we have, in our college, we have six major initiatives. At least three of them directly relate to food security, food systems, nutritional and human health, as well as climate change and related aspects are major research thrusts in our college. And if you take a look at the cross-section of our college, almost every department is doing something along the lines of what Robert just described as food security. Production will be the production department, like agronomy, horticulture, and soil science would come in there. And then you have the nutritional sciences and food science department would help into the nutrition aspects of it. And then we have community and environmental sociology department. They will be dealing with aspects of stability, for example. And what is the other one that you said?
Nutrition.
So we have the researchers and projects that are dealing with almost all of these facets of food security. And this symposium this afternoon is basically to showcase the various research that is being done on campus. And the reason we have invited Robert to be our chief guest is to kind of exchange information what the AID is doing and how we can partner with some of the work that they're doing around the world.
Yeah, very, very cool. We, you know what, let's take a call. Jacob in Eau Claire has a comment or question. Jacob, hi, thanks for calling.
Yeah, I would just like to add to some of the cool things we're doing in Wisconsin. So I run the wellness program at the Chippewa Valley Free Clinic here in Eau Claire.
Yeah.
And so I work a lot with connecting people in need with the resources they need. And so one of the really cool things that Eau Claire does is that the farmers market here, your supplemental nutrition assistance program dollars or food stamps, it doubles at the local farmers market. You swipe your card and then they give you double the amount of tokens to go spend at the farmers market.
Additionally,
my alma mater high school, Holman High School, they have a greenhouse, the agricultural science program. They have a greenhouse, and they make 300 heads of lettuce at least every 40 days, last I heard, and they're trying to plant an orchard as well.
Well, that sounds like a pretty cool. Thank you so much for calling. Robert, you want to comment on that?
Well, just to say that I think a lot of the lessons and learnings of things like what Jacob just talked about, they can have global relevance. I mean, part of this is helping people access food, making markets more accessible and available to them. The other piece is, you know, there's probably in some of the work he's doing, there's probably content around, you know, what's important to eat. You know, and understanding how to communicate to people about, you know, what are the best choices that they can make for themselves and their families, or at least answer their questions and try to give them better information. I think we see that embedded in our work, just as we see that embedded in parallel efforts here in the United States.
Yeah. Jacob, thank you so much for calling. You can join in, too, by the way. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or post on our Ideas Network Facebook page. Well, let's talk a bit about Feed the Future, and mm-hmm. describe that program. I mean, a lot of people probably don't know a thing about it.
Right, right. Well, about 10 years ago, there was a big price shock in the world where food prices spiked, and this caused great hardship and hunger, real hunger for poor people in the developing world, because they spend most of their money on basic mm-hmm. food items. So that led to, under President Bush, an emergency response, which then President Obama turned into Feed the Future. And then in 2016, Congress actually adopted this Global Food Security Act and made it the law of the land. And now we've had great leadership coming from our new administration. Our administrator, I'd like to just point out that he's from Wisconsin, Mark Green.
Mark Green,
he represented the place, the area around Green Bay, is a great champion of this. And so we have had this continuity that's allowing us to really deliver on this, the vision here, which is that, sure, AID is investing, but then so are our partner countries, and we're leveraging capacity from the U.S. Department of Agriculture, the Peace Corps, which I know Wisconsin has a special relationship with, and many other areas in where the U.S. is present overseas, to kind of leverage all these capacities onto solving this admittedly complex challenge.
It's actually, it's got to be just a coordination of that, getting everybody sort of pulling in the same way can be a problem, I would think.
Right, and I think that's a fair comment. I think having a clear focus the way we do, we measure our work by reductions in extreme poverty, reduction in child stunting, which is a marker for chronic malnutrition, and now, and we can say more about this, resilience we are measuring by reduction in child wasting, which is a marker for severe acute malnutrition. But with that focus, we can really think across our agency partners, you know, what are the key ways that we can contribute? But it does take work, but we think it's worth it.
Well, let's talk about some of the results. I was looking through some of the results of the Feed the Future program, and I saw some really encouraging numbers there.
It really is very gratifying to see what's happening. We are looking at reductions in extreme poverty of 19%, almost a fifth over a 5 or 6 year period. We're looking at reductions in the rate of stunting that are 25% greater reduction than we would have otherwise had. And we look at the impacts of our work both in the regions we're working, but also we compare them where we're not working, and we can see the benefit that comes from working together with these local and national partners.
Really interesting to me. Rob Bertram, Chief Scientist for the U.S. Agency for International Development, Bureau of Food Security, one of our guests. The other, Sundaram Gunasekaran, who is a professor at the UW-Madison in Biosystems Engineering and Food Science. And they're going to be with us right up till 12:30. We'll take a quick look at the news and weather, and then we'll be back. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network. We're talking about food security today, and our guest, Rob Bertram, Chief Scientist for the U.S. Agency for International Development's Bureau for Food Security, and Sundaram Gunasekaran, who is with us as well. He's a faculty member in the Department of Biological Systems Engineering and also in Food Science at UW-Madison, Director of CALS Global within the College of Ag and Life Sciences, of course, at UW-Madison. And they're putting on an event later on today. It's called the Food Security and Global Development Symposium. So we're going to ask Gunnar about that as well. But you may have some questions about creating a world without food security, with food security, without food insecurity. Let me put it that way. We don't want them hungry. Join the conversation. You may even have some experiences as well. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org or go ahead and post on our Ideas Network Facebook page. So love to hear from you. We were talking off during a newscast about this farmer to farmer program. Talk about that a little bit, Rob.
Yep. Be glad to, Larry. We leverage U.S. capacity in so many ways. We try to make this truly an American effort. And one of the ways we do that is through the know-how that American farmers can bring. Think of something like a dairy farmer who's had a lifetime of experience, and he can go to a setting in the developing world where we're working and be incredibly effective, or she could go and be incredibly effective at you know, bringing new insights, seeing what the context is that these farmers are working on, because it's different for sure, but then being able to leverage their background, their connections to sources of information. So we do that in many respects, and Wisconsin has been one of the most generous states in sharing its farmer know-how. I think we've had 84 farmers go overseas in the last 4 years alone, and they're doing great things, and often they're so valued that they're brought back, because the experience and insights they bring. But we try to leverage American know-how in many different ways, including through the universities. In the first part of the show, I mentioned the Global Food Security Act. It looks all the way from emergency response to a crisis, all the way to upstream research in, say, a company or a U.S. university like the University of Wisconsin. So we try to leverage that whole spectrum of American expertise, and we think that in so doing, we're also bringing back benefits to the U.S. in terms of dealing with problems, sometimes before we get them here.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things on the farmer to farmer, the farmers from here that I worked with are adaptable people, men and women, and I can just see the good that they could do. They wouldn't come necessarily with a set, you do it this way at all.
No, you're absolutely right. The people that are drawn to this work and the organizations they work with cooperative groups, Land O'Lakes, groups like that, they go into this eyes wide open, knowing that they're going to be working with people who face a different set of challenges, but their underlying aspects of the enterprise that are more universal, and they can see how to sort of fit a solution into a specific challenge.
You know, you're working, Feed the Future, for going back to that for a minute, you work in many, many countries. How do you decide where to, you've got to focus somewhere.
That's right. We call it a global initiative, there are a dozen target countries where we are looking at the same time a major challenge around food security.
Level of need there.
Exact level of need. The ability or the potential for agriculture and the food system to really respond to it. Mm-hmm. So the fact that there's a substantial agricultural dimension. Very much the willingness of the country to partner with us. You know, if a partner country doesn't prioritize this, we probably shouldn't either, because it's less likely to be sustainable if they're not really bought into it. And then we look for a context that's conducive to it. In other words, that they try to adjust their policies in such a way that are going to is going to free up investment and innovation on farm all the way through the food system to market.
There are so many issues, and maybe the countries that you've selected. I know Bangladesh is one.
That's right.
Ethiopia.
Yes.
Ghana.
Mali. Senegal.
Kenya.
Nepal. Yes.
When I think about those, many of those countries, I'm thinking, oh my goodness, the problems there in terms of growing food and growing food successfully in a country like, I don't know, we'll just take Ethiopia as an example, have to be immense. So overcoming those kinds of problems is...
Well, I can tell you that part of the impetus for these investments in food security started many years ago also in the Horn of Africa, in Ethiopia, where the United States was spending $500 million on emergency food relief and $5 million on agricultural development. Oh. And our administrator said, What is wrong with this picture?
Yeah.
You know, we need something. And Administrator Green has introduced a whole new concept that looks at humanitarian assistance and then says, how can we invest today to reduce the humanitarian assistance that's going to be needed tomorrow? And he calls that resilience. And that's a new theme that we've been talking about here today with colleagues here at the university. And then that is now, in fact, our bureau is going to be renamed Resilience and Food Security Bureau. That's the proposal.
Oh.
So we're going to be thinking much more creatively about how to get ahead of the curve. But there are a lot of success stories in doing it. And there's actually good news coming out of Ethiopia now in some key areas where they used to be very dependent on imports and now are meeting more of their own needs.
Gunnar, talk a little bit about, I mean, you are kind of a director at CALS Global. Maybe talk about CALS Global a bit and then how we've kind of fit into this whole program.
Well, CALS Global is, our job is to engage our researchers, both faculty and staff, in getting their research translated into, for example, where it is most needed and more impact can be made. We like to partner with USAID, USDA, and other agencies, for example, Gates Foundation and so on, and places that really need our technology and research know-how and our expertise in help build capacity in terms of training their researchers and students and both higher education as well as research infrastructure, so on. So they are able to improve their ability to grow and safely and securely process and prepare nutritious meal and make it available. So we work on all aspects of food security, but our mission is to engage our researchers' know-how and technology to be helpful to what they do over in these countries that USAID is focusing on.
One of the things I've noticed over the years that when we get a faculty or faculty members involved and sometimes in country and often in country that makes such a huge difference in their own thinking and how they might even go about their own research and projects.
Yeah, so we have a number of researchers go both do short-term and long-term assignments in different countries, and we invite researchers from there to come here, and we help them learn some of the technologies that we are working on and give them resources that they can successfully employ when they go back to their countries to work with us. And for example, in Ethiopia, we're working with their government. The former First Lady of Ethiopia was here as a part of the... she was here last year for the World Dairy Expo, and dairy was one of her major initiatives to enhance the nutritional status of Ethiopia, and we have a lot of individuals on our in our college to work with the government of Ethiopia and universities in Ethiopia to help improve their dairy resources as an entire new way to enhance nutritional security, if you will, Ethiopian community. And another initiative that we are working with Ethiopia is related to potato research. And the climate change has pushed the potato growing regions up north now comparatively mm-hmm. what it used to be before. And they have a major problem in the disease resistance of the seeds that are a problem. So our researchers working with Ethiopian, the SIP, which is the Potato Research Center, trying to resolve some of these issues. So we are trying to develop these kind of partnerships where we can really help them do what they do better and more successful at it so they can be more self-sufficient in growth and distribution.
Rob, you're going to add to that.
I do. I would like to, because USAID has been a partner in some of this work, and one of the things we're talking about in particular is what's called potato late blight. Well, that's what caused the Irish potato famine.
Yeah.
Changed history, that disease. And it's still a huge problem in the world. But by partnering with scientists here in Wisconsin and at the International Potato Center in Peru, and in our national partners, we are actually, and with the private sector, we are actually getting close to having late blight resistant potatoes by bringing in some of the resistance genes from wild potato relatives from Peru. So it's a very exciting story of how, by being involved in a challenge that's really elsewhere, we can make U.S. agriculture safer at the same time. And we have lots of examples in crops like wheat, sorghum, groundnut, getting where we gain by giving.
The late bite, you know, as I think about that, and those kinds of developments have ramifications for us, positive ones, right here in Wisconsin or Idaho or other major potato producing places.
Absolutely. The United States, by virtue of how diverse our agriculture is, we have the capacity to be helpful to in many parts of the world, but we also have the capacity to benefit from being involved in finding those solutions. And we think about things like heat and drought. Well, we can get ahead of those by partnering with researchers in parts of the world where situations are even more severe than we might face at the moment, but in the future, who knows?
Yeah, water's got to be... Is water part of the Agency for International Development Program?
Absolutely. USAID leads the implementation of the Water for the World Act. It's a law, and a lot of that focus is on water, sanitation, and hygiene. But we've also been looking at water in the context of food security and resilience. When we think about resilience, drought is a huge problem, or lack of water. So thinking about, for example, small-scale irrigation and how that could be a transformative factor in not only having some crops during the dry season, maybe some vegetables that can be both consumed and sold, being able to keep more livestock because you have enough water and forage for them, and certainly also the burden of women carrying water, going for hours a day to carry water from a distant site. Wow. So we try to think of water in a holistic way, and I think, if anything, some of the changes that Administrator Green is proposing are going to help us to integrate water further into our work.
Yeah, I was thinking about some of the work in the College of Engineering and...
Well, even in College of Ag and Life Sciences, we have Biological System Engineering Department, which is my home department. We have researchers that work with water issues as well as Soil Science Department. And we work with Civil Engineering Department on campus as well. And we have a water center. So the number of researchers on campus are dealing with various water-related aspects that Robert just alluded to.
Yeah, interesting, interesting stuff for sure. You know, we got a lot of people listening. We don't have people calling right now. If you'd like to join in with your own experience or question, give a call at 1-800-642-1234 with your own questions or comments. When you think about the challenge, the biggest challenge to food security, what is it? What do you think it is, Robert?
Sometimes we hear people saying, well, we'll have 10 billion people to feed in 2050. And so there is that enormous challenge of producing such a huge amount more food. And we'll need more than just the numbers suggest, because diets are changing as well. But I think the thing that is critical is we kind of have to start at the beginning. Yeah. In other words, I think by focusing on what we can do to end hunger as we know it, and that's what's embodied in the Sustainable Development Goal by 2030. Bill Gates also talks about the end of extreme poverty. I mean, I'm talking about the kind of grinding poverty that one might see in parts of the world where we work, again, in another 15 years or so. I think understanding that solving these nearer-term issues can put us on a path. But we need to be open, I think, to better policy. We need to be open to science and using science effectively. I think we need to think about how to leverage innovations around for example, information, better weather forecast information for farmers, not knowing about markets. There's lots of solutions. There's not sort of a silver bullet, Larry, but we do need to, I think, to do it right, we can't just look 30 years ahead. We have to look now at what we're facing. And many of doing the right things will also put us on the road to that long-term sustainable.
Yeah, we need to do things right now in these countries. Let's just take another country as an example, maybe talk about what might... an emphasis would be in, well, pick one, Ghana maybe, or, well, Ghana. Let's take Ghana.
So Ghana's an interesting country. The north is drier and poorer than the south. Our work is primarily in the north. But a lot of what we need to figure out is how to help farmers in the north connect to markets, but also how to help them gain from the innovations that I was talking about, maybe small-scale mechanization, maybe some irrigation, maybe better market access, better kinds of seeds, and so better information about, say, pests and diseases and what technologies are available. So Ghana is an example of where things are really happening. Ghana is moving forward. But it's not even everywhere, and but we are excited that Ghana is it achieved its Millennium Development Goals, and it's moving forward. But I think what we will see is maybe more diversification of the system, more integration of livestock and poultry, and maybe aquaculture as cities like Accra demand more diverse foods, maybe more horticulture, fruits and vegetables.
Yeah.
So we'll see that transformation occur over time. But it is happening, and we, along with our university partners, the NGOs we work with, faith-based groups, are very much part of it.
Hmm. Gunnar, can you talk about the symposium this afternoon and what's going to be covered at that?
All right, symposium this afternoon is at 2:30, and we will, in addition to Robert being a guest, featured guest, we also will have the Secretary of Wisconsin DATCAP, Department of Agriculture, Trade, Consumer Protection, Sheila Harstoff, is going to be speaking as well. And then we also have a local NGO, Bluemont, which is a major multinational NGO, and Roger Irvin, the CEO, will be speaking about how UW and his NGO can partner for helping solve some of the food security issues around the world. And then we have six professors from UW. They will be speaking on their research. Each of them are given only 5 minutes as a way to kind of engage the audience to respond to some of the Q&A questions and discussions. So we are trying to facilitate open-ended discussions with the audience. We're expecting about 100 to 150 people this afternoon. It'll be an interesting discussion. And Kate VandenBosch, our dean of CALS, will also be on hand. So we're looking forward to have these experts to talk about and discuss with what they're doing and how what they're doing sits with the overall mission of USAID and food security-related problems.
Yeah. Rob, what are you going to be addressing directly?
So I'll be talking about our work in general and about the implications of the Global Food Security Act. But, Larry, I'm going to especially talk about how we try to harness innovation. I'm here in Madison. I think it seems fitting that, you know, we at one of the nation's leading agricultural research institutions. But to think about that, and then I also want to try to point out how much our work is really about seeing ways that the private sector and private capital will also invest in our partner countries, but potentially globally as well. So it's that innovation approach and the handoff from research to people who actually take the innovation and apply it.
And it's only a couple of hours away. Could someone still sign in or join in?
Oh, of course. Everybody is welcome. If you haven't signed in, you will not get a name tag, that's all. So we will have blank sheets of paper that you can make your own name tag. Other than that, everybody is welcome. And I also want to mention that we have a poster session. About 20 different posters will be there with a variety of topics of interest in food security. And we have a reception, so people are welcome to join us and engage with the researchers here in CALS.
Well, it's wonderful that I think it's a great symposium, and as I said, I've had a chance to spend a lot of time in AID activities myself, and appreciate it very much, you being with us today, Rob and Gunna. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Larry.
Rob Bertram, Chief Scientist for the U.S. Agency for International Development's Bureau of Food Security. Gunna Sundaram, our guest as well, faculty member in the Department of Biosystems Engineering at the UW-Madison, and directs the CALS Global at the UW within the College of Ag and Life Sciences. And thank you all for listening in. Appreciate it very much. Tomorrow we'll take a look at all things wildlife with our wildlife expert Scott Craven from the Department of Forest and Wildlife Ecology. He's an emeritus professor now, but he still comes by to talk with us here on the Ideas Network. Thanks for listening.